Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 148 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford.
We're almost 150.
Almost there, I know, big one.
Yeah.
Ooh. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I'll apologise in advance if it sounds like I've got a cork shoved up each nostril.
Because he hurts.
I'm a bit bummed up. Yeah, I finally lost it. Pencil up each nose and... Who does that? It's Blackadder, isn't it?
Yeah, that's always the joke though. The quickest way to get into psychology or psychotherapy or psychiatry even in Britain is to knickers on your head, chip up each nose, and go and punch a policeman. That's the quickest way to get.
And that'll do
help.
It for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. We're talking about social anxiety today, aren't we? Listeners emailed in, which we'll get onto in a sec. Which is going to be quite interesting, actually. Not just kind of social anxiety, but the kind of digital. Social anxiety you can get now, you send an email that says the wrong thing and all of a sudden World War III kicks off.
Yeah.
What have you been up to, Sean? Life?
I'm the attic man.
I'm the attic man!
It's doing really well. I'm actually measuring up shelves at the moment.
Uh-huh.
So there's two ends to the attic. One end will be the musical end and the other end is more of a writing end.
Yeah.
So there's different sets of shelves at either end.
I've been up there, but not for a while.
Yeah.
So, how much space you got up there?
It's good.
Big old
room. It's about 3 metres by 5 metres.
Okay.
So it's fair.
Yeah, it's bigger than this little space we're in. Consultation room at the moment, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, that's going to be great.
And you're going to be whacking your head on the kind of
eaves. I'm a midget.
We'll be all right.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant.
Yeah.
Life's pretty full on for me at the moment. I'm burning the candle at, well, how many ends can... A candle has two ends, doesn't it?
But you're burning in the middle as well.
In the middle. I've just lashed it in the volcano and it's...
So do you think this cold you've got is your immune system crashing due to the emotional stresses and pressures you're under?
Possibly. Yeah, possibly. I've got a week off coming up. Week after next, so I just need to claw my way to there. And I should be all right.
Yeah.
I should be all right.
So you're going away for that?
We're going to go up to Northumberland, actually.
Yeah.
Typically enough, as we like to do.
Yeah, nice place.
So hopefully get a bit of nice bit of spring weather and unplug. Oh, my nose is just ridiculous. Since Christmas I've been coughing and spluttering.
At least when you've got a throat, it sounds like you're going to sing the blues. But
It doesn't sound good, this, does it?
No.
It doesn't sound good at all.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, ridiculous, but... Yeah, well, it was Easter as well, wasn't it? So I should be eating really healthy, kind of pineapple and all sorts of healthy green stuff. Yeah,
you're eating chocolate.
I've just got a house full of chocolate.
You and I have just been scoffing chocolate.
I thought you'd nicked one of mine. Mine, inverted commas. Anyway, let's crack on. We had an email from long-time listener, as he described himself, Colin, who has a bit of an issue with social anxiety in the sense that he's always worrying about things that he's said in conversations, even to the point of like, years gone by. And I can relate to this a little bit because there's certain things you do or say in life, aren't there, and they just kind of stick in your head, and you kind of, years later, as Colin described in his email, put your head in your hands and think, I can't believe I said that. You kind of imagine that the person that you said it to still brings it up in conversation.
Every day the things...
Still thinking, I can't believe what Ed said, oh my word.
The problem with looking backwards at stuff is that if I think about when I started working as a therapist, and I think of some of the things that I said to people, with what I know now, I could kind of cut my tongue out and think, oh, that's crazy, why'd you say that?
Some of the advice you've dished out.
Or being a clever dick or whatever. Before I realised I wasn't a clever dick. The thing is that at any one time, most people say and do the things that they do at that time because that's what makes sense to them at that moment. So with the same emotional resources in the same situation, you do exactly the same thing. Yeah, so but it's easy. Retrospect, hindsight, you can be a clever dick then and you can beat yourself up for stuff that you did. But if you were back in the same situation, same resources, you would do the same thing. Yeah. Yep. And it's only because you like I say, I can remember things I said to people. And I think, oh my God.
Yeah. I was trying to think off the top of my head. I couldn't think of anything. But Colin mentioned that he'll read back, like, from emails he's sent to people at work, perhaps, from the day gone, back the previous day or the week previous, just to kind of read what he emailed, and then that can trigger anxiety as well.
See, there's a kind of an OCD, because listen to what Colin was describing. I think that it's not as clear as what you'd see as social anxiety. I see a lot of what he was saying as it's almost like post-traumatic stress disorder, when someone keeps flashing back to an event.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you keep flashing back, that event grows and changes. Yeah, what you feed grows, what you starve dies. So that it can become much, much bigger than it ever was, because we keep revisiting it and it gets bigger. But the other condition that you need to consider is obsessive compulsive disorder, because when we think of OCD,
uh-huh,
we think of people turning on and off light switches and doing that kind of stuff. But the most common form of OCD is mental rumination, regurgitation, repetition over and over again.
Yeah.
So most people would have had the experience where there's a song rattling around in your head you can't get rid of. And you think, oh, for God's sake, stop!
Yeah.
And then you find yourself, you're off doing it again.
CBeebies theme tunes for me.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's OCD.
Yeah.
But we don't see it like that. So some of what Colin's describing, I'm not sure diagnostically that I'd say, yeah, that's social phobia. I think that we might be looking at something which is OCD-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And that tendency that happens in post-traumatic stress disorder, because of them, we think about PTSD as someone who just had the most horrific, you know, traumatic experience. But we all do.
Yeah,
we all do the flashback.
I've seen people being blown up in Afghanistan or something like that.
Yeah,
but it doesn't have to be that extreme, does it?
No, and it's almost like degrees of, mild post-traumatic stress disorder kind of thing. But when your mind works like that and you can't let go of something,
yeah,
then you will keep revisiting it.
Sure, I'm trying to think of things that I. Because, yeah, you're right, I haven't been in a war, I haven't seen people being blown up, but I do have certain little trigger events from my life that I revisit a lot, and they're quite pathetic little things, but I'll tell you one of them because it's quite funny. it ended well, but it was horrendous at the time. When I was about probably 9 or 10, I was at a school, I think it was a Cub sports day, actually, and one of the events was throwing a cricket ball as far as you could, and you had to get a certain badge, you had to be able to throw it a certain distance. And I was on my third attempt, and I'd already thrown it this required distance to get my little tick that was made up. I thought, I'm going to try a new little technique here, see if I can really, really chuck this cricket ball. So I did a kind of funny overarm real swing, and as I brought my arm over, it kind of went round. And the ball ended up going like 90 degrees left, exactly. Straight into the face of one of my friend's mum, the mother of one of my friends, whack right in her eye. She had to go to hospital.
Wow! And did they? They didn't think that was deliberate.
They couldn't.
Did
prove
you like
anything.
This woman?
Yeah, no. She didn't give me any chips when I went out for dinner. I saw her. I've ever seen her a week later at like a cross country event or something. Her eye all puffed up and out.
High eyed.
God, that's the worst point of my whole life.
Yeah. But you...
But that's something I revisit all the time, you know, it's like 20-odd years later.
And when you revisit it, do you revisit what it felt like?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the key, I think, is that the thing, the kind of elastic, the glue that keeps us attached to these things is emotion.
Yeah.
So most of them have an emotion, and people, it isn't just negative things, people do have emotional connections to positive things. You'll see someone sat there grinning at themselves, and if you quiz them, you know, oh no, I'm just remembering when, you know.
Yeah, so, sure.
But it's that emotional elastic that pulls us back there.
Mm.
And when it's negative elastic, that's when we need to cut it and let go of it. Because it is the issue of, like, the past is gone, the future has yet to come, and all you can do is be in the moment.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that, for example, Fred's funny little cricket ball incident, which There's probably far more serious things people are thinking about. They're trying to. But how would I detach myself from that memory? Do I need to? I guess.
I think you only need to do things.
I do feel awful when I think about it. It's like, oh my god, I threw a cricket ball in a woman's face.
And when you see this woman now, she's got a patch over her eyes.
I don't know where she is, to be fair. Yeah, we're not.
So, if you saw her coming the other way.
She made a full recovery, I know that much. But yeah, we went to secondary school and I lost contact with this guy, so I didn't see her for the rest of my life, thankfully.
It may be that something happened to her from where the ball hit her in the eye that changed her life. And she now sits there thinking, you know, the best thing that ever happened to me was when I threw that ball in my eye. It changed my life.
Well, do you try and work with people in that sense and try and look at the positive?
But if you're a positive person, there are no negatives. Uh-huh. Yeah, because everything that happens, as our American cousins would say, we don't have problems here, we have learning opportunities. If you look at the world positively, everything that happens to you is something to learn from. And then you get into what we're rehearsing. So what Colin's describing here is grabbing an event that he's seeing in a certain way. We don't know whether the people involved in that event see it the same way that he did. So let's assume that he's just beating himself up for things that he feels about things that he's done or said.
Yeah.
Yeah. The more you visit it, the bigger it becomes. So if you keep ruminating on it, it will fill up 10% of your consciousness, 20%, 30%, and you can get to the point where you've only got that little bit of stuff left for you to deal with your everyday, because the rest is full of this repetitious looking at things. And the issue is, and Colin or anybody that has the same issues, is that most people, when I'm working with them, will say to me, it's just the way that I am. And we come back to that, no, it's not. Yeah. It's what you've learned to be. What you rehearse, what you practice in life, is what you become. And if you want to change it, then you start to practice other things.
Yes, okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, Colin added a couple of links, which I'll put in the show notes, as well as a few of our own, which are really helpful, actually. He also included a quote from the Buddha. If you propose to speak, always ask yourself, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Which, I mean, that's good advice. I mean, yeah, you can't stop and think for a few minutes before you say everything, but instinctively, if you've got that thing going on in your head.
I think that from a kind of a spiritual point of view, that quote is spot on. If you look at it from a social point of view, things that we would describe as fun or banter may not be the truth. There may be the white lie. There may be the playing with perception that we do.
Yeah.
So it isn't necessarily as fixed as that.
I guess as well, being Brits, the way we use language, we use it ways. Mentioned the word banter there, but yeah, we the way we use language in Britain is quite ironic, and we use a lot of sarcasm, don't we? So it's even easier for someone to kind of trip up, and because I think the way I speak to people, which I think I'm fairly well liked, but I use a lot of sarcasm, and there must be a certain percentage of people I run into every day, every week, that don't get that little joke that I, you know,
that was
intended as a joke, and they.
But when I was a teenager, we had this thing where everything was reversed. So if you had a really good experience, then you'd say, oh, it was absolutely the worst I've ever had. Yeah, and if something was really bad, oh, that was the best. So that everything was inside out.
Yeah.
And you could have a really good time, describe it as that was the worst time I've ever had in my life. And then someone could get offended because they didn't get
well, right, yeah, because my group of mates that I grew up with, it was exactly like that. And it still is. We've got a WhatsApp forum where we're always just ripping into each other massively. But every now and again, you know, as we grow older, a new person would come into the group, whether it be a girlfriend of one of the pals or another guy would come in, just someone we work with or something. And I'm guessing adjusting to our little social clique was quite tricky.
Yeah.
And then what we actually do know, people that have, you know, girlfriends say that split up with a mate because they couldn't handle the amount of pressure, you know, in a social situation where we're all just ribbing each other constantly and talking about stories from school and all that stuff.
Yeah. But that idea about who's allowed to say what to whom,
yeah,
are the rules of social engagement in a group.
Yes.
So if the deal in the group is every so often someone runs up to you, hits you with a bat and runs away, because that's fun, if you're not into that, then you might be offended by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's that thing. So when I look at what I understand from what Colin was saying, is that... I'm not. I would be interested to have heard some of the, or to have read some of the texts or the emails that were concerning him.
Yeah.
You know.
Because, yeah.
Because there's two things in that. Is that one is we send off these things, messages, texts, emails, and we mean something when we send them. When they arrive in someone else's inbox, that doesn't mean say that they're going to hear what we said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the amount of problems that go on in relationships and between people because either the spell checker went a bit odd on when you were composing it, or it's been misinterpreted at the other end.
Yeah, I send 30 or 40 emails a day, and I very rarely have an issue. I don't read them back, the ones I've sent. Every now and again I will, to, you know, I'll need to query something with a client that I've... maybe a price that I've quoted at the end of a project, so I need to make sure I invoice them the appropriate amount, and I'll read through a conversation. Sometimes I'll think, oh, why did I say that, yada yada, but I've lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? Yeah, no, it's very...
You were saying about you and I both sending off.
Yeah, no, a couple of weeks ago I did have an issue with a client where I thought the client's response to me was a bit I felt like I'd said something wrong, so I did query them in the email. I said, oh, sorry if you feel that way, yeah, yeah. And they replied instantly, kind of, oh, no, sorry, like, it's all fine. I think they just weren't used to... Well, they hadn't got their email language thing quite right.
Yeah.
So it was all cool. So I think the fact that I queried it helped. Yeah. But sometimes, maybe Ed of 3-4 years ago, who isn't the confident entrepreneur that he is, would have just kind of not replied and worried about it for weeks on end.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that the way that our ways of communicating have changed.
Yeah.
We haven't necessarily kept up with that process. And unless you are in the know, in the group, then it's really, really easy to get it wrong.
Yeah.
If you think about the idea of... we all belong to something. We belong to tribes, and the smallest tribe is your family. And sometimes the tribe is a bit bigger, like your friends are a tribe, which either you're in or you're out. Uh-huh. And when you're in and out, it's us and them. And then when it becomes us and them, then you get into the who's allowed to say what to whom stuff. And then it is, what are the conventions, what are the norms of the group?
Mm.
There's one of the things that Colin was saying, and I wondered, it triggered off for me. When you look at Bridget Jones's diary,
yeah,
there's a bit where there's a guy called Fitzherbert who she has to introduce on a microphone. And you can, because you can hear the soundtrack, in her head she wants to say tits pervert, because that's what he's like.
Yeah.
And it's like tits pervert, tits pervert. And then she actually managed to say Fitzherbert. Now, I think lots of us do that kind of thing, where the frontal lobe of the brain is the conscience bit that moderates what's going on, the emotional bit below it. So the emotional bit is thinking, tits pervert, tits pervert. And sometimes, if the frontal lobe isn't strong enough, the emotions will come straight out.
Yeah.
And people would just say it like it is.
I was listening to a compilation of like news presenters who've kind of mispronounced Jeremy Hunt's name over the last couple of years. His surname in particular, I should say, and got swapped one of the letters in the name Hunt.
Yeah.
Loads of them have done it. It's probably got to the point. Maybe a lot of people do dislike it, you know. But it's happened so many times now that people will be thinking when they're presenting his name on a programme, don't say it.
And then it comes out.
They say it.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
And that's to do with this conflict inside us between what we're emotionally feeling and what the cognitive filter is.
Mm.
You know, so how many times have you said to people, oh, hi, how are you? And underneath you're thinking, you bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And it's very real. And if the filter starts to break down, people will say all kinds of things that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
And afterwards, when they drive away, then they can review it and they can think, oh my God, why did I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. They can feel guilty then.
Yeah. Think about how we kind of our work life as well, which Colin touched on in his email, with his email stuff, sending to colleagues and clients. I'm not sure what his line of work was. But quite often now, if you want to get ahead in business and in a company as an employee, you need to be socially active, don't you?
Yeah. Networking.
Yeah, you need to be a team player and all that kind of thing. Yeah, right. So I do a lot of business networking. I'm quite used to it now, but when I first started, you know, going into a room full of other self-employed people, small business owners, it was really intimidating. So I see those people now when I, you know, I'm maybe hosting a meeting or I can see them looking all nervous, you know. So, and we get the group that I go to in Bebbington, there's a big solicitors firm that join the group and they send different members of staff each week quite often. And they're there. I can tell a lot of them are there because they have to be, because the management is saying you need to go networking, and they're not the type of people that should be networking all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
And does that mean that they can be inappropriate?
Well, not inappropriate, but just, well, they're not comfortable, you know. But it's something you can learn. You know, I'm pretty good at it now. But there's little tricks in one of the articles I mentioned that can help with that kind of thing. I always find that now that turning up early for an event like that is good. Be one of the first people there. So people approach you then if you're standing in the corner, rather than if you get there, if you're nervous and you think, oh, I'll get there at the last minute.
Yeah.
Then you open the doors to this room full of people. They're all talking to each other and everyone's got a partner already. Mm. And then you kind of just get the situation gets worse because you're walking around this room trying to find someone to talk to. Mm. Oh, my God, no one wants to talk to me. Get there early. You need problem solved because someone will just come up to you and introduce
them. So what do you do when you get there late?
Well, if the event has a good host, they'll stick you with someone. But
yeah, it's being able to, how do you break the ice, isn't it?
Yes.
And the easiest thing in networking things is to wait till someone stops talking, catch their eye and say, hi, my name's Sean.
Yeah, because quite often you find, well, yeah, everyone else there is in the same boat.
Yeah. I do, over the years, I've done quite a bit of court work where you have to be very, very careful about what you're saying. Because if it's a Crown Court, there's going to be a jury there. If it's a magistrate's court, you've got the bench. Because people are going to interpret not only what you say, but the way that you say it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you put your hand on the Bible and all that to help me God.
Yeah. No, we don't do that.
You don't do that anymore.
Just to help me God. But the issue of being able to say, you know, that quote that you had, the Buddhist quote, about saying what you mean.
Yeah. Colin's quote, to be fair, yeah.
Yeah.
Credit Colin.
Yeah. Good old Colin. it's so important. Because then, I mean, I have had situations where I've reflected on what I said. And then, yeah. I mean, one of the things interesting, I was saying to you, I've got this letter here from one of my clients who's doing a spell in prison at the moment.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I need to write to him today. But I know that what I write to him will be read by prison officers before he gets it.
Okay.
So in that, you have to be aware of what you're saying.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because someone else is going to check it, I guess.
Vet it and check it. And
Yeah.
Hasn't got the instructions for you.
Yeah, yes. How you make this bomb is.
Yeah. I can include a little, a file.
A little file, a file cake. And that.
Enjoy this cake.
But that whole idea of, you know, I need to be aware of what I'm saying, what I'm doing, yes.
Yeah.
But once I've said it, maybe I do need to review it. Maybe there's times when I need to go back on something and go, look, didn't mean that, or, you know, sorry for that, or whatever.
Sure.
So I'm cleaning it up. But once it's done, I have to learn to let it go. Yeah, which does go right back to the live in the present, steps 1 and 2.
Yeah, okay, we'll be describing the problem for ages. How do we,
Yeah.
Step 2 of the
Yeah, forgiving yourself.
Yep.
Yeah, and not holding on to it. But the thing is, in that obsessive compulsive sense, if you keep grabbing an event and you keep going over it,
yeah,
you will embroider it. It will get more technicolor, it will become sharper, it will become bigger.
Right.
Yeah, and what you have to do is, as it appears in your mind, you observe it, don't fight it, you let it go, and put your consciousness on something else.
Uh-huh.
And then it'll come up again, and you observe it, you let it go, you put your consciousness on something else. It could be that if the message in your unconscious that's being presented to you is actually showing you're a waste of space, you're a load of rubbish, is to have something that you say that counteracts that. You know, like, I'm rich, I'm healthy, I'm fit, I'm wealthy, I'm sexy. You know, that you repeat something to yourself to replace that negativity.
Okay, cool.
And you might be driving along in the car saying, hey, I'm rich, I'm wealthy, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm sexy. You know, out loud, just to get rid of the negativity. Thoughts become things. What you focus on gets bigger. If you keep rehearsing your attachment to the negative parts, that's what you got.
Yeah, you need to change what you rehearse, don't you? Because...
Yeah. And which is like looking in the mirror, who loves your baby? Yeah. But getting that positive stuff going.
Yeah.
Yeah. And accepting that Colin or anybody didn't come out of the womb doing what they're doing. It's not the way they are. It's what they've learned to be. And you can learn to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let it go. Let it go. You know, life's too short.
Song about that, I think. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah, all right. Anything else you want to mention, Nora?
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking about it, and I was just scribbling down some notes, I mean, the issues about social phobia are very often about what is the norm of the time of the group.
Yeah.
And the kinds of things that are interesting is if you Google people queuing and look at people queuing, they all stand an arm's length apart. Yeah, then people will naturally space themselves. If they were to put their arm out in front, they'd put their hand on the shoulder of the person in front.
Okay.
Yeah? Which is natural social spacing. If you get closer than that, you're getting into intimacy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the good game is, if you want to be socially inappropriate, is to go to the cocktail party and step into someone's space and let them step backwards. And then when they step backwards, step into their space and they'll step backwards. and you can get them to go right the way around the room. If you just start, whilst you're chatting, just keep stepping into their space and they'll move.
Cool. Yeah, there's a Seinfeld episode where one of Elaine's boyfriends is a close talker.
Uh-huh.
And he gets right in people's faces, not like aggressively.
Yeah.
He just talks almost nose to nose.
Yeah.
It's quite, off point for most people, except Jerry, who's kind of... just takes it, just stands right in front of him. Oh, fine.
Yeah.
But
no social boundaries.
Yeah.
And I've even had things in the workplace where people who have had that no sense of proximity have ended up people making complaints about them for kind of sort of harassment or kind of a bit kind of sexual abuse-y kind of stuff. And it isn't. It's just that they're not aware that people have personal space.
Yeah. All right. Cool, you got a resource of the week?
Well, my resource of the week would be... It's the issue... issue of visualising and creating your script. So if you go to the talker on the website and you look at the morning focus, it's about how do you build your script for the day, but more importantly, how do you build your script for a situation?
Okay.
So if you are going into a meeting and you are going into something... visualize it, use that exercise, visualize it before you get there, so you've already done it, you've got a forward memory already. So that your script's already in place, and you might go off script and have to put yourself back again, but you've had a go at it already.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Brilliant. My resource is a sitcom which I may have mentioned ages and ages ago, Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is an American sitcom, which is hilarious. It's just got a bit of swearing in it.
Yeah.
If that's not your bag. But basically Larry David, who's actually one of the writers of Seinfeld, plays himself. And he plays himself as this guy who's made Seinfeld, made hundreds of millions of dollars, lives in California, and now just goes around offending people, but not deliberately. He basically says what he thinks. And he's always getting in trouble.
Right.
For saying the wrong thing,
yeah.
And he takes chances on his language. Like, I was watching a clip the other day where he's at a He basically says the things that you'd like to say but don't have the guts to, but not in a nasty way.
But that's what I mean about that emotional self and the cognitive filter, because most people are saying those things on the inside, but they never get as far as the outside.
Exactly. Well, he says these things, and the repercussions are just hilarious and amazing. Like, I think one episode where he's at a pool party, like a family pool party, and one of the kids is getting ready, and this kid has an enormous penis. But everyone else at the party kind of notices it, doesn't say anything. Larry says to the dad, "There, your son's got quite a penis on him there." Obviously, it doesn't go down too well, but it just explodes for the rest of the episode, of just the kind of repercussions of this thing.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting...
I was basically thinking about the elephant in the room.
Yeah. Or he doesn't want to sing the happy birthday. He doesn't want to sing happy birthday to Ben Stiller in one episode because he doesn't like the happy birthday song. No. Gets into trouble with Ben Stiller for not singing happy birthday.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
So, that's my resource.
Okay.
Next week, I'm not sure what we're talking about. We've got a listener request by the bucket load to go through, which go through my emails now. But it'll be a winner, won't it, Sean?
They always are. Everyone's a winner.
They always are.
They're always positive.
We are indeed. Livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links. Thanks to Colin for emailing us with this suggestion. Send us a message, podcast@livingthepresent.co.uk, if there's anything that you would like us to discuss.
Yeah.
Until next week, take it easy.
And you. Bye now.
See you later.
See ya.
Bye.